Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Hello, this is Patricia Quinn on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Scream and scream and scream, scream, scream.
I believe that looks like a TARDIS over there.
It looks like a TARDIS. Very large.
Well, I'll get you to introduce yourself and seriously, sorry about this.
Hi, my name's Janet Fielding and I played Tegan in the 1980s, who was the first non-English companion and an Australian air stewardess called, Tegan Chivanka.
Fantastic. And of course, this is the Fifth Doctor. Am I right?
Yeah.
Oh, I hope so.
But I started with the Fourth Doctor. I started with Tom Baker. And then I did almost all of Peter's, except one, Peter Davison's. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So he's here as well.
Yes.
And I represented Paul McGann when I was an agent.
Mm.
And I flew over to Vancouver when he was doing the pilot for an American version of Doctor Who. And thankfully that didn't work out because I don't think the Americans understood Doctor Who, quite frankly.
It's taken them a while. It's taken them about 25 years or plus to get it.
Yeah, it has. But also, I don't think they understood it in terms of making it themselves. Yeah. I mean, you can still... I mean, for years there's been references in The Simpsons and, and the Trey Parker people. Yeah, the South Park people.
And definitely.
Almost all the people who are making British television now grew up as Doctor Who fans during our era, so that's really quite strange.
It's a bit like Monty Python.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's one of those cult shows that they all watched. Yeah. Yeah.
To assimilate and percolate through. But now, I mean, there's Torchwood. There's the US version of Torchwood and a Doctor Who version. Do you watch it still today?
I do. I can remember seeing Matt Smith in the theatre just before... He was cast as Doctor Who, and thinking, God, he's wonderful.
Yeah.
And David Tennant, I knew before he became Doctor Who, because I was an agent. As I said, Paul's agent, and David was at the RSC with one of my clients, Liam Cunningham. They were in As You Like It together.
Right.
And Liam Cunningham, who was my client, said, "You've got to meet David because he's like one of the biggest Doctor Who fans ever, and he knows exactly who you are." And he was also going out with one of my clients, Anne-Marie Duff, who plays the lead in Shameless.
Yeah. Oh, right. It's a very small, incestuous world, the Doctor Who world. Not in a bad way, but a good way.
Yeah, you're right. You're not wrong.
Seems to be like 2 degrees of separation. Do you think this is something to do with the TARDIS?
I don't know. Look, what can I say? I go to Brisbane Airport yesterday and I know, not that many people in Brisbane anymore. It's a city of, there's 2 million people in southeast Queensland. And I run into somebody that I know at Brisbane Airport, so I give up.
Oh dear. And so leaving Australia to come and go and work in England, that was a huge step for that era. Was that a big...
No, I didn't know that I was doing that.
Oh, okay.
I went for 3 months.
Oh, right.
It kind of wasn't intentional. Yeah. It just kind of happened because I fell in love. So I ended up staying.
Right. But your background as an actress yourself, can you tell us what brought you to that?
Because I started it university, really, doing rehearsed readings in the English department and with Geoffrey Rush and Billy Brown.
Wow.
And we did The Miller's Tale from Chaucer.
Yeah.
And they persuaded me to audition for the newly formed Queensland Theatre Company's production of Wrong Side of the Moon to play Rapunzel. And I did, and I got the part.
And how did you get the Doctor Who part, the Tegan? How did that happen?
They were looking for an Australian to play an Australian, and I was with an actors' co-op at the time.
Okay.
And they sent a letter to the producers saying, you want somebody to play a bossy Australian. They don't come any bossier than this one. It's not true, is it, Emily? This is my niece, Emily. It's not true, is it? I'm the most easygoing aunt in the world. Say yes, in my will.
Emily's got a groovy aunt, a very groovy aunt. How many aunts can you say, Emily, that have been a companion? It's one of the most famous doctors ever.
There he is over there. Peter. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And did you ever think it would, you know, this sort of thing would ever happen? That you'd be accosted at an airport, well, you know, dragged to Melbourne?
No, because, like, it was 30 years ago, and, you know, you do this piece of television ephemera, and then... I mean, John Nathan Turner, who was the producer at the time, said, oh, your life is about to change, and you go, yeah, yeah, you know, and it,
yeah.
And it was, you know, it's still... ongoing, and we still do. I mean, I now do the Doctor Who audio plays,
right.
And with Peter and Sarah, who was in the show with me, and Mark Strickson, who now lives in New Zealand. He's based in New Zealand. He spends his time travelling the world making wildlife documentaries, and we catch up usually around about Christmas time, and we record three or four stories, and that's always a huge amount of fun.
That would be,
yeah. And we're very rude to each other in an affectionate way.
Because of the characters still in that time and era as well. Is that hard to go back and do that once a year or whenever it is?
Yeah, you've got to try and remember to keep your voice...
Yay!
...slightly light. That's weird.
Now, a favourite... Do you have an all-time favourite in the series?
Yeah, me. No.
Companion. Okay, as a companion, how do you feel about never being a doctor?
I think it's a male character.
I
think the way it's conceived is a male character. You know, it's not a female character somehow.
You don't think it'll be a female doctor?
I doubt it. Look, I like most of the work that the girls do. You know, I think Freema's done some lovely work. I think Catherine Tate was wonderful.
Yes.
I loved.
There she is over there.
Yeah. I love Billy Piper's character.
Yeah.
You know, that was so refreshing and that was so new and so different from the way the characters were conceived when I was doing it.
The whole thing was a real kickstart, wasn't it, with Eccleston? And,
Russell T. Davies, what a genius.
Yeah.
You know. And Stephen Moffat, similarly, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. Absolutely.
They call him God, by all accounts.
Oh, do they? And quite right, too. You know, I like, he's, you know... I loved Coupling. I was a huge fan of that show. And, I mean, I had clients in one of Russell T. Davies' early series, Queer as Folk, you know. It's genius. Genius
brilliant,
stuff.
Yeah.
You know, just brilliant.
And groundbreaking. And
yeah,
I think he's
absolutely.
Very good at doing that.
Yeah.
Would it be all right, before I let you go, because I think we're sort of all supposed to move around, we're not allowed to hog you for too long, to do a ID tag for our little show?
Yeah.
It's called Sci-Fi and Squeam. Not Scream, Squeam, as in... nauseous on Joy 94.9. Thank you.
Hello, this is Sci-Fi and Squeam on 94.9.
Tegan, or obviously your name, and this is yes.
Hello, this is Sci-Fi and Squeam on 94.9 with Tegan Javanka from Doctor Who.
Thank you so much. That's great. Thank you.
Something I can do, tell me.
Too late, Barry. Going soon. It's time to say goodbye.
Don't give up. You can't leave me now.
I might regenerate. I don't know.
Feels different this time.
Die, Doctor! Doctor? You're expecting someone else?
I...
That's three eyes in one breath. Makes you sound a rather egotistical young lady.
What's happened?
Change, my dear. And it seems on a moment too soon.
Hello, I'm John Richards, the co-creator and writer of the best gay and lesbian science fiction themed comedy you will see all year, Outland, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
This is Sonia on Sci-Fi and Squeam, and here we are at Time Lords in Melbourne at the Ridges Hotel, and we have a very special guest.
The guest is me. I am K-9.
Or words to that effect. Hello, it's John Leeson here. Yes, 5'6" inside leg measurement, collar measurement. What do you want? Yes. As many details as you like. Lovely to be here. I was here last year, I think, for a convention. And it's been a very, very long swim. And I'm still awake, which is amazing after a rather long journey.
Yes.
But looking forward very much to this weekend.
Did you have to cross the Tasman? No, you crossed the...
No. We come from the other way.
The other way round.
Come from the north.
The north.
Yes, the northern hemisphere, where it's still in... Well, Britain's still in the throes of winter. Deep snow drifts, but not in London, fortunately.
No, winter is coming.
Yes.
As I say.
Good luck.
Now, K-9, I mean, incredible. So how did this come about? I'm sure you get this all the time.
How did you come about with...
How did it come about? Well, back in 1977, I met up with a director I'd worked with in the theatre some years previously. And he said, John, he said, you've heard of Doctor Who? So I said, yes, of course, everybody's heard of Doctor Who. Are you busy? So I said, well, no. Well, I can't tell you anything officially, but stand by your phone and see what happens. So a fortnight later, my agent phoned up and said, John, the BBC would like you to play two characters in Doctor Who. What do you think?
Two.
So I thought, my God, having met Derek, this director, I thought my ship had come in. So I phoned my agent, and my agent said, well, this is the funny thing, John, the one of the characters is the voice of a virus. So I thought it was a very, very, very tiny part, I thought that would be. And the other one's the voice of a mechanical dog. What do you think?
Get work where you can get it.
Absolutely. So he said, but don't worry, because it's only in for one story. So I thought, I'll take the fee. And lo and behold, of course, it's not 1977 any longer. Here we are in a new century. And I'm travelling around the world still playing K-9 on occasion.
You don't get asked about the virus very much?
Not very much, no. It was a nasty virus. We saw to it. Yes, we saw it off.
Everybody's immune to that one now.
Yes.
But, of course, no one's immune to K-9. I mean... It's had its criticisms, of course, but I mean, I remember it too, but I think, of course, it's so popular, almost generic now.
It's an icon.
An icon is a much better word.
Absolutely. It's an icon. It is, I must say, one of the most surprising facets of my life to have played K-9, because basically I'm a classically trained actor, and the theatre is generally my home. I spent a lot of time in the 1980s doing sitcoms and things for the BBC and others, so I've had a mixed diet of work. And,
so the voice of K-9, how did that come up?
It doesn't sound terribly much like my voice, does it?
No,
but if you pitch it up an octave or two and it goes up a little bit like that, and you clip everything just rather like that and make it sound less human. That's what K-9 sort of sounds like.
Right. Yes.
So it was about the technological side of it. They were changing the pitch and tones and everything, or...
Well, you're doing sort of modulated dialogue in as any, because you're in a dramatic situation, but you deliver it in the way that K-9 delivers it, you know.
And so, all this time later, K-9, I mean, how's the relationship between the two of you?
Well, there's only one of us, really.
Who's the master?
oh, it's me. Definitely. Yes, K-9 is one of those... He was been used rather like a sort of sonic screwdriver in some cases to get the Doctor out of trouble, which was rather a pity. But K-9 is one of those slight irritant factors, because if you imagine that you've got the Doctor as a plus factor, his companion is another plus factor. You don't want a third plus, you know, two's company, three's a crowd, if you follow me. And so K-9, in a sense, needs to have a sort of irritant quality, be the little bit of grit inside the oyster. So he's a know-all. He's a show-off. He thinks he knows better than anybody else. He's got all the parameters of risk. He's got all these. But of course, then on the plus side, he's got defensive capabilities. He can rush to the. No, he can't rush, but he can. He can very, very slowly amble towards a point
he rolls
of danger.
Along and he does go into the danger, and he did that a lot of times and saved the Doctor's scarf and hat many times.
So yes,
very important character.
More than that. I think. Yes. Well, you know. People seem to think so. So that's, I suppose, why I'm here in this little.
Do you enjoy? Yeah, do you enjoy coming to little places like Australia and conventions?
Conventions are amazing because you meet really the family that is Doctor Who now.
Oh yes,
the worldwide family of the English-speaking world, and there they all are up there
in cardboard cutouts. Some of them,
some of them, and there's
where's K-9?
Who's not?
Where's
well, K-9? I think there is one
is
at
there a
this
K-9
convention.
Coming?
Yes, I think so.
Will you be providing the vocals for this K-9?
I think if my arm is twisted sufficiently, yes, possibly. Why not?
Why not? Fantastic. Well, John, look, it's amazing to talk to a very famous metal dog, probably the most famous metal robot intelligence I think that's ever been on television.
I'm lost for words. Thank you for interviewing me.
Thank you. John, would it be possible for you to do a little ID tag for us? Yes. Obviously, with the canine voice. I'm sure you get this a lot. Obviously, your name, canine or something like that, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Squeam,
as in queasy, on Joy 94.9.
Right, I'm going to write it down.
I've got the T-shirt here.
Right.
Does that help?
This is K-9. You are listening to Joy. No, you're listening to
Sci-Fi and Squeam. Sorry.
Correct. That is perfectly correct. Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 949.
That's it?
That's it. Excellent. Quite correct.
It's almost the antithesis of Davros, actually, the voice. There's nothing really defensive or aggressive about K-9's voice. Because I've heard Davros saying almost a similar tempo, but yeah, quite the opposite.
No, he's sort of inclusive sort of character, I think, yes.
He is, yeah.
He wants to be friends. Like a dog, really, that wants to be friends, but has to be cautious in certain dangerous situations.
A guide dog, almost. Very loyal.
Oh, extremely loyal. Yes, that's probably why. I mean, and the Brits, I mean, we love dogs, unfortunately, but of course K-9 isn't a dog, but the Brits seem to think that he is.
Don't tell them, otherwise we won't.
No. Secret is safe with us.
Thank you so much for talking to us, John.
Cheers.
Welcome. This is Davros welcoming you to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Listen or be exterminated.
Doctor! Patrick!
You
that thing caught me!
What is this woman?
An earthling, no one of consequence.
It's a loss.
Be quiet.
She's one of your crew.
In a manner of speaking.
I see the Time Lords have emotional feelings.
Of sorts.
Surely a great weakness in one so powerful.
Emotions have their uses. They also enhance life. When did you last have the pleasure of smelling a flower, watching a sunset, eating a well-prepared meal?
These things are irrelevant.
For some people, small, beautiful events is what life is all about.
You have affection for this woman?
She's a friend.
And you do not consider friendship a weakness?
I do not.
The attackers must be found.
Getting a bit rough, is it?
Remain silent, or you will die. And you will come with me.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9, and here we are at the Riches with all the Time Lords and some extras on the way, including Alexandra Tynan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Very good to be here.
Of course, I'll get you to explain exactly your position and role and experience with Doctor Who. Cybermen is the word I think most people probably say to you.
That's right. Some people call me Cyber Mum, actually.
Oh, really?
Well, because I was in at the very beginning, and I was called Sandra Reed then, just so as people don't get too confused with a change of name.
Nothing to do with being involved with Doctor Who?
Absolutely nothing, no. I just got married at some stage. I was more or less not exactly forced into the situation of working on Doctor Who, but I was told I had to, because in those days you were rostered on the BBC and you were told what programme you were going to be working on, and that was it. And it wasn't, Doctor Who wasn't one that I really wanted to work on at all. Wasn't too happy about it, but the way things turned out, here I am.
I know.
48 years later.
So when did you come onto it? Well, in the mid-60s?
I came on just at the end of Bill Hartnell's time on it. I did the transfer from Bill to Patrick.
Okay.
And then I stayed on the show for quite a while. And I think there were only three costume designers throughout the whole thing who actually did more than one series.
Oh, right.
So I did, I've lost track, but quite a few.
Right. So you were certainly up there. You've experienced a few different doctors then.
Only just the one, and a bit. Well, it was only just a touch of William Hartnell, because he was about to leave anyway. He wasn't well. But working with Patrick was fantastic. He was just lovely and very easy to be with, and no trouble, and we had a lot of fun. It was really good.
Excellent. And so tell us a little bit about the mythology, I mean the Cybermen. How did you come up with the Kettlehead, or I don't know what you would describe it as. How did that come about?
Well, those funny handlebars on the side of the head are still there, even in the latest one that's just coming out. Well, as I've said before, I really had no interest in science fiction at that time at all. However, things change, and I'm much more interested in it now. But in those days, as I say, I was forced into doing it and didn't want to do it at all. But with the help of Kip Pedler, who had written the first Cybermen series, chatting to him and having the support of a wonderful producer, Innes Lloyd, and crew, it got done, you know, but on a very, very tiny budget. And I look at those first lot of Cybermen now and I think, oh dear, they're pretty crummy, but I'm assured that they were quite scary.
Well, they are. It's really effective. And when you do look back at even some of the stills, you think, incredibly rather ominous. Where did you come up with that?
It was just, I had to think of a humanoid who was still part human, still had certain parts of the body that were like ours, and other bits that had been replaced. And cybernetics back in the 60s was a word that people really hadn't heard. It was very, very new, you know, about body parts being replaced.
Yes.
To extend people's lives. And so the Cybermen had got that down to a fine art, and they were developing that and turning themselves into these different creatures, but they still walked on two legs and had two arms, but were not very nice at all.
That's amazing. That is amazing. As far as the imagination of Doctor Who and how it was ahead of its time, and to know that you were part of it. Actually,
oh, I know. I have to pinch myself every now and again. Did I really work on that? Oh my goodness me! But it's such an honour, you know, to be here now on the 50th anniversary year, and still be talking about it,
and those
Cybermen are still following me around in one way or another.
So you don't regret it at all. You're very, you know, comfortable with all this attention now, 50 years later?
Oh, it's lovely. I'm enjoying every minute of it. That's great. And I've been involved a lot in my other parts of my career with young people, so it's really nice to be involved with the younger generation and talk to them about, you know, what it was like working in TV and what it's still like working in TV and film.
You still work?
Well, I haven't done anything for a while, but I have been back. I was working in the world of opera back in England not all that long ago. If the right thing came along, I might, but who knows? I've got other interests now, too.
Now, this is a mean question, but do you have a favourite doctor? Everyone gets asked that.
Well, I mean, of course I like Patrick. I very much like Christopher Eccleston. I thought he was marvellous, and I was very disappointed when he didn't come back. I loved the scripts, and I loved the way he played the doctor, and I loved the one-liners and the humour of those early Return series. And I thought he was a handsome doctor, but one who you felt really good about. It's very hard to describe, very hard to explain it, but I just had a sense of relating to him on the screen.
Yeah, he seemed very flawed yet passionate.
Yes, exactly.
And gave it a real kickstart, I think, for the new... incarnation
That's
of the
right.
Doctor series now.
And he had wonderful scripts to work with, and the storylines were fabulous. I just laughed my way through a lot of them.
Russell T. Davies, yes.
Yes, they were very, wonderful, very good. Wonderful. And David Tennant was terrific too. Sometimes I had trouble catching up with what he was trying to say.
There goes the Cybermen now.
Oh, yes.
Probably
you
want
see,
you
they,
to stand
they
next to one
follow
next.
Me everywhere. so I guess... Yes, that answers your question. More than one. I liked more than one.
Yes, great.
Well, Alexandra, look, it's just wonderful having you on the show this evening. But, yeah, it is awesome to have such an event as this one, with the combination of not just doctors but people that worked on the show. So I do appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much, Sonia. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Alexandra.
Hello. No one is available to take your call. Please leave a message after the tone.
Hello, Sonia. It's your father here. Your mother called you the other day, but you didn't bother calling back. Listen, love, we're a bit worried about you. We got a call from your doctor. He says you haven't been attending your appointments. Now, Sonia, you know that you've got a bit of an unhealthy obsession with horror movies. And the science fiction stuff, too. It twists minds, Sonia. It's not healthy, it's not normal, and it's not right. If you could call your mother, please, and tell her how you're going, and please start going to your appointments. Sonia, who knows what could happen if you don't change your tastes? Why don't you just try and enjoy a nice romantic comedy every now and again? Maybe one with Katherine Heigl, like your mother and I do. All right, love, we'll see you Christmas. And if not, the Christmas after that.
And don't forget your appointment with Sci-Fi and Scream every Tuesday night at 10 p.m.
So, Paul McGann, I hope I got that right.
That's me.
That's you? Excellent.
Guilty.
Welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Squeam, that's it?
Squeam.
Squeam as in nausea.
I'll squeam and squeam and squeam.
I had Patricia Quinn do that, just that way exactly,
it's
a couple of weeks back.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So you're here for Lords of Time, and you are one of those Time Lords. You are number eight.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing better than me.
Yeah, I'm the George Lazenby of Time Lords. I say, hello, Doctor.
How you doing, Doctor? You alright?
I'm fine, Doctor.
So, what is it like after all this time being a doctor?
It's a strange thing.
And you have to share tonight with all these other doctors.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. We're quite a good team. Like a formation flying. It's a strange one. I was Doctor Who for... No, I shot Doctor Who for 6 weeks, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys did it for years. I did it for 6 weeks, whatever, 17 years ago.
Mm.
But, you know, whether it's 6 weeks, 6 days, or 6 minutes,
you're in.
You're in the pantheon. You're on the
you're
wall.
You're in the TARDIS forever.
You're in the TARDIS. You're part of it. You're
do you
part
think,
of this mythology.
Do you think maybe time has been bent or something's happened?
And that's why you're here?
Perhaps. It feels like, but jet lag, I tell you.
Mm,
yeah.
Yes. Well, I hope the chips are good.
It was the movie that everyone talked about with your particular Doctor
the
number
movie,
eight. Yeah,
which
so
wasn't a movie at all.
Well, it was an episode.
It was a TV pilot.
It's supposed to be.
Mind you, it was on 35mm, which all the American TV was shot on in those days. So, I guess you could call it a movie, because that's what they shoot movies on, isn't it? Not what I mean.
Not so much anymore, but yeah, I know what you mean. Now, I remember seeing you in Whiffnail and I many, many moons ago.
That.
Do you remember that one?
I remember. In fact, it's a sad week because we just lost Richard Griffiths. He played Uncle Monty in the film. He died this week.
Yeah.
Tragically.
Oh, that's sad.
In hospital. Mm-hmm. Age 65, just 65. So it's a sad week. We all remember.
Very young. Very young.
Shocked at the news this week. We're all remembering him.
Yeah.
Wonderful actor. He led the way, really, in Withnail and I. You know, we were, Richard and I particularly, Richard Grant and I were green. You know, we'd never done a picture, nor had Ralph Brown, who played Danny.
It's a marvellous film, and a great symbol of the era as well. And then to go from that to something like Doctor Who, how did that come about, just briefly? To go from an indie sort of movie, I suppose they call it today, a cult following, to another cult.
I think back then, when I was in my, whatever it was, 20s and 30s, I had a good run. You know, you could just go from one thing to another one. It was, and they were diverse and different.
Much more flexibility and...
Yeah, I think, or maybe they just couldn't decide what you were good at or castable at. But I had a really good time, you know, as a kid, as a young actor, and you know, there was a sort of rash of imposter parts. They decided I had a sort of plausible, believable face or something, but I could you know, comfortably get away with somebody that, you know, you might sort of root for at the beginning, but then it slowly dawns on you. In fact, oh my God,
he's
the bad guy.
Yeah.
He's the bad guy.
I like that.
Oh, well, actors like it even more. Actors like that.
You like playing a villain or the darker side?
Actors do. They get the best lines. They get the best situations. They usually get to kiss the girl, drive the car, shoot the gun
at the same time.
All at the same time. Yeah.
But, Paul, so, yeah, Doctor Who, so many years later, moons later, you're still doing some work, some audio work, I believe. Doctor Who audio.
Been doing them ever since. It's been Big Finish audios, and now we must be in our 10th, 12th year. Mm. And it's a hoop because, for me personally, it's sort of eased and dispelled some of that regret that I felt when the pilot didn't happen and... The series was never shot, or at least the one that, you know, I never got to shoot a series, and so never got really to engage with the ideas that we'd had prior to the pilot. You know, this is how we're going to do it. This is what I'm going to be like. I'm going to look like this. I want to play it like this. This is what I think of the character. Suddenly, it was nothing. It all ended abruptly. But on big since the audio's picked up a few years later, and in the main, we've been able to do the things that.
I think the one that you were in, actually that Doctor, actually precursors at least where Russell T Davies kicked off with Eccleston, I think, personally. You even look similar.
I do too. I think it's. I mean, the pilot that we made, though strictly speaking it was a failure because it was never made into a series. It never got picked up. But I think
people just weren't ready.
I think we can console, not console, but, you know, we... I think we... We can feel slightly gratified that in that interregnum, so to speak, which I think was over 10 years, 12 years, this was the only thing that was shot. You know, that we were, I think, partly responsible for keeping the momentum going. I agree with you. I think that, you know, it was we were part of the reason that Russell T Davies. Certainly, I know because I was there at the time that the BBC, who had only kicked it into the long grass 6 years before, suddenly got interested again. Anyway,
okay, exactly.
So, you know, it kick-started the thing.
Certainly has kicked it all the way down under. Now I have to wrap it up, but before I do go, I have a quick moment to ask you to do a tag for our show. Obviously, your name, what doctor you are, which doctor, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
I'm doing 94.9.
Wow. What?
On Joy 94.9.
Okay.
Sorry.
What was the name again?
I'm Joy 94.9.
What was the?
Oh, Sci-Fi and Scream.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm being fed all these lines.
I know.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9 with the big screamer himself, Doctor Number 8, Paul McGann.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Enjoy your cuppa and your chips. Thanks very much.
When you began all those years ago, sailing off to see the universe, did you ever think you'd become this? The man who can turn an army around at the mention of his name.
I got too big, Dorian, too noisy. Time to step back into the shadows.
Your real name is hidden. It burns in the stars, in the cascade of Medusa herself.
It's more than just a secret, isn't it?
Perhaps if we knew his name, we might have a clue to all this.
Silence will fall when the question is asked.
You're a man with a long and dangerous past, but your future is infinitely more terrifying. The silent believe it must be averted.
What's so dangerous about my future?
My name's Craig Charles. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hello, my name's Robert Llewellyn. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on 94.9 Joy. I got it wrong. Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.